Hello, my friends. I hope you are doing absolutely fantastic wherever you are in the world and whatever is happening in the world at the time that you listen to this. Thank you very much for coming and visiting us at the Layer Yoga podcast. Layer Yoga, helping you overcome anxiety through the power of classical Hatha Yoga, enabling you to be calmer, joyful and stronger out there in society. Today's episode was a really, really enjoyable one to actually record as well, actually. I spoke to a lady by the name of Dr. Terilyn Sell. Very, very knowledgeable lady for over 20-odd years. Dr. Sell has been helping people overwhelmed by anxiety, depression and addiction, and helping them to get off and stay off medication and put an end to their symptoms, using an approach to balance their brain chemistry and permanently change their behavior through a number of different methods. And one of those sort of more unusual ones was to introduce different things into their diet as well. So that was something really fascinating, and I'd be hoping to get Dr. Sell back on and explore that further with her. But if you are just coming across us, then please feel free to give us a follow on our socials. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn at Leia Yoga. You can find us on Instagram at Leia_Yoga7. You can find us on YouTube at The Leia Yoga Journey, and TikTok is also Leia Yoga. And also as well, once you've had a listen, if you like what we're doing, please subscribe and leave a bit of feedback. You know, we want to make this experience as pleasant for you as possible. But as I say, fascinating lady, fascinating conversation, lots of great nuggets in there as well. So please enjoy today's episode. And without further ado, I introduce to you Dr. Terilyn Sell. Dr. Terilyn, how are you doing? You okay?
Good. I'm really excited to be here.
Yes, likewise. Excited to have you on the show. And did I pronounce your name correctly there?
Yeah, Dr. Terilyn. You got that right.
Great stuff. Well, yeah, like I say, really, really pleased to have you on the show today. And thank you for making the time to come on. Whereabouts in the world are you based?
So I'm in the United States in a state called Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, right. It's Wisconsin.
Where right in the smack dab in the middle of the United States by the Great Lakes.
Got you.
Midwest, yep. Mm-hmm.
Is that like part of the Rust Belt?
The what?
Is it the Rust Belt or the Bible Belt?
Well, I'm not really sure. We'll call it the Hunting Belt, I guess.
That's definitely got more of a ring to it. Cool. Okay, so you guys are kind of insulated from some of the madness that's happening out in cities at the minute, are you?
Well, I mean, we've got our fair share of big cities in Wisconsin that are quite impacted, but I've been pretty proud of the little, well, I say little, but probably about 100,000 people community that we live by and how they're handling things. It's been a prideful moment for me.
Great. Okay. Well, no, that's really, really good to hear. But we shall not dwell on negatives, because it certainly is a lot of unusual stuff happening in the world at the minute. So yeah, essentially I wanted to find out a little bit more about you. You seem to be doing some very, very interesting stuff with kind of non-pharmaceutical methods of tackling mental health issues, anxiety, depression, et cetera, et cetera. And that's something that I find very interesting. So first off, do you want to just give us a bit of background to yourself, where you came from and how you came through this journey, realizing that actually, you know, pharmaceuticals probably aren't the best way to go for people trying to overcome these types of issues?
Sure. Like, how far back do you want me to go? Because, you know, I've got a sordid past. No, I have a sordid past. Yeah. So I'll actually start a little bit earlier so the listeners can kind of get a gist of who I am a little bit. So I actually started my career in public relations, and then I had children and I moved into the world of childcare, and I owned 3 childcare centers throughout the course of my life. And it was when my kids became a little bit older and didn't need it anymore that I kind of started transitioning out. And I thought, what else can I do that is still very helpful to people and families, and that I still feel like I'm making a difference. And I just happened to land on mental health counseling. And from there, it was a real interesting journey because I ended up working in the prison system in Wisconsin for about 6 years. So I was literally one of those moms that was juggling everything because I was still owning the daycare centers. We were in the process of selling them off one at a time, raising three small children. And, you know, I decided to go back to school when I had a one-year-old, a six-year-old, and a 13-year-old at home. And by the time I graduated with my PhD in psychology, I had a 10-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 21-year-old. So my journey was long and sordid in detail. But what I noticed working in the prison system is I worked in maximum security. And then I transitioned over into part of the state in Wisconsin. We're pretty progressive, surprisingly, and we have a system for the most mentally ill inmates in the state, and they go there. And then we used to call it being like their mechanic. We'd pop open the hood and get them ready to go back into general population, back to the prison in which they came from. And it was there that I realized how much medication was flying around. These men were often over-medicated, and it became very frustrating because we would go to these meetings about them, and the first thing it would be about was medication changes and things like that. And I remember distinctly one time, like kind of testing the waters, I had been reading some research articles on holistic ways to help with mental health. And there was an interesting study that I read that was talking about omega-3s. And giving inmates omega-3s reduced their aggression level while they were incarcerated. And so I was like, well, if not now, then when? I'm just going to bring this up. And so I'm sitting there, you know, with psychiatrists, nursing, social workers, unit managers, blah, 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 talking about this aggressive inmate. And I said, have we ever considered trying omega-3s? Like, here's a research article that says it's worked in a jail. I think it was in a jail. And I literally got sneered at and laughed at in this meeting. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to keep that to myself. And so behind the scenes, I would talk to the inmates about it, you know, during sessions, like, hey, is there anything on Canteen that you can order that would fill the bill for protein to stabilize your blood sugar? And, you know, can you order an omega? Can you talk to your doctor about, you know, letting you have one? That kind of stuff. Because I knew I wasn't going to get through the system, you know. So anyway, I ended up transitioning out of that program into a clinical supervisory role for a short amount of time and was, again, appalled at the system. Like, I knew I couldn't work in it any longer. It was causing me anxiety. And that was the first bout of like debilitating anxiety that I had ever felt in my life. Luckily it was only about a 6 month time period for me. And I was thinking like, okay, I need to go to the doctor and get medicated. And I remember going to the doctor, and of course I was prescribed something because that's what they do, which is fine for some people. And I went home with my prescription and I said to my husband, I said, either I'm going to stay in this job and medicate my way through it like so many people do, or I'm going to make a big change and jump ship. And within 2 days, I said, after my, you know, 30th panic attack on the way home, I went home and I said, so I've made up my mind. I'm leaving my state job, my good, cushy, you know, solid state job. I'm leaving it. And I transitioned into full-time private practice. And I thought, okay, well, the key to mental health is making big changes in your life, right? Like, I could do it, could leave my job. Well, then I realized not everybody can do that, you know, or not everybody is willing to make such a big change, right? So then again, I started seeing patients in private practice, and the same thing was happening. more and more medications. And I found myself, like, again, being a good steward to psychiatry, saying, well, why don't you go back to your doctor and get a new prescription or a change in dose? Just talk to him about alternatives, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I am doing exactly the same thing here that I was doing in the prison. I'm doing nothing different. So I started researching more and more and taking classes about nutrition and brain health and how to influence it in a natural way. And I was shocked. So luckily I had some clients that really trusted me. And I would say, like, have you ever thought about, you know, a certain amino acid to help you? And they're like, tell me more, because I'm desperate to do something different. And so I started, like, well, you can try this. And they would come back to me and be like, what else do you have? Because that worked. And honestly, I was like, are you kidding me? It actually did work. Like, what? You know, I was just as surprised as they were, because, you know, we live in a society now that's kind of a supplement pushing society, right? Like, you have to take a supplement for everything. And, you know, do they really work? That's a big question that I get. And now my response is adamantly, yes, if you get the right supplement for you and the right dosing for your body, you can see substantial changes. And that's how I just started, you know, clicking away in this whole brain health neurotransmitter space. And I will never turn back. And I talk and talk and talk and talk about it all the time, because there is alternatives and nobody thinks that they exist or that they won't work. So that was the short answer of who am I and how did I get here? So there we go.
Nice. Well, wonderful. No, that's great. That was really, really engaging and interesting. And so relevant, because I think, you know, the US, I think particularly, I think spends, what, about $3 trillion a year on healthcare. And about 70% of the people are on some kind of medication.
And women are twice as likely to be on medication than men, you know, in the United States. And I think that's in part because women show up to the doctor's office more frequently than men do, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the amounts, think about the amounts of psychiatric medication that we're giving to children, causing more neurotransmitter disruption as they grow. You know, there was a recent study that said, you know, if you start your children, please, I know I'm going to get some backlash for this because I don't have the study in hand, but if you start children on psychiatric medication super young, their chances of having bipolar disorder later increase exponentially.
I can fully believe that, because A, the brain's still developing. And secondly, you know, destabilizing the chemistry of the body.
Yes.
By putting chemicals in there, excessive amounts of chemicals is going to have some kind of impact, and that's not going to balance the mind.
No. Well, and I call medication. Okay, so I do believe there's a time and a place for medication. I do believe that. But I also believe that so many people are stuck on medication because there's really no way to get off of it. So when you think about, if you have cancer, let's just say, like, you'll come in and the doctor will say, you know, okay, we're going to set you up with X amount of radiation, X amount of chemotherapy, and then you're done for a while. And then we'll come back to it and reevaluate, you know, in 6 months and see what it looks like, right? In the mental health world, we just say, well, here's your prescription. And guess what? You might need this forever. So, you know, when clients talk about, like, well, what's my end game here? Like, am I going to need this forever? They get responses something like this, like, well, you know, let's talk about that when you start feeling better. Let's talk about that when, you know, at a later date. It's never, you know what, we'll evaluate this in 3 months and see about getting you off of it. So what happens is there's a huge amount of the population that are on psychiatric medication for more than 10 years. And by that point, it is extremely difficult, not impossible, but extremely difficult to get off. They talk about a titration schedule that is like for every month that you've been on a medication, or I'm sorry, for every year that you've been on this medication, plan on at least 1 to 2 months of getting off of it. So if you're 10 years on it, you know, that's well over a year of titration to get off of it. But a lot of times you'll go into the doctor's office and you'll say, hey, I want to get off this medication that I've been on for 10 years. And you'll get a titration schedule that's maybe 4 weeks long. And then you're kind of screwed, because that medication has changed the architecture of your brain. It changes how your neurotransmitters work. It changes the function, right? And you're expected to just like go cold turkey off of it and not have any side effects. So a lot of times when people get off this medication, or they're trying to, like, you know, oh, I tried before, my first question is, how long did you titrate? Well, it was about 4 weeks. It was really long. And I'm like, oh gosh, no, you should have been a year and a half. You know, are you kidding me? And I'm like, I am not kidding you. Like, you go so slow, your brain doesn't even realize it. And then you support yourself nutritionally and with supplements while you're doing it. You know, like, it's the most healthy time of your life. But they're like, I can't do it because I have such extreme anxiety or suicidal thoughts when I came off of it. I'm like, right, because your brain was missing something. It didn't know how to function without it, you know, similar to drugs. It's the same concept, you know. So it's just, it's a fascinating discussion. And I think it's one that we need to have. As soon as you feel bad and you want to go on medication, and that's fine, it's not my first line of business, you know. But we need to start talking about how you're going to get off. Like, what is your game plan? Let's work on your lifestyle so you don't have to be on this forever, you know. But so many people get on something and it doesn't even really work for them anyway. So.
Well, yeah, there's a few different points there, really. One, just around the medical side of things, absolutely, in certain scenarios, you know, allopathic medicine, those types of interventions, they've absolutely got their place. Mm-hmm. The example that you gave was around cancer. And this is where I think people need more education, need to educate themselves. So as an example, a couple of my closest friends, one's granddad got prostate cancer, and the other's father got prostate cancer also. Mm-hmm. My friend's granddad went through chemo, subsequently ended up dying, because I think more people die from the chemo than the actual cancer itself.
That's a whole different episode. But yes, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. But on the other side of it, my friend's father, who they didn't go through chemo initially, he's still alive. I mean, unfortunately, it's spread to another place, but he's still here. He's still alive, kicking. He's lost a load of weight because he doesn't eat sugar anymore. But again, that's one element of it. And the other element of it as well is that when it comes to, and this is one of the reasons I got involved with Laya Yoga, was that because I'm a daily practitioner of classical Hatha Yoga, and it's my firm belief that, I won't say everyone, but just about everyone, if they had some kind of process like that in their life to manage themselves, then being balanced and happy is just a side effect of that, because you're balancing your mind, body, energy, and emotions.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these issues tend to come a cropper because a wrong diet, don't know how to handle stress, or, you know, just massive amounts of stress. And then obviously, you know, we're getting into the area of big pharmaceuticals and, you know, that whole lobby and the incentives to give those types of drugs out. So there's a few different strands there. But to move away from the problem, so solution-wise, omega-3, that's something that's fascinating as well. So do you basically work mainly on the nutrition side of things to help people's mental health?
So yes, because neurotransmitters are... So when we talk about neurotransmitters, just so everyone knows, we're talking about things like serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine, epinephrine, GABA, that kind of thing, like those big, heavy, hard-hitting neurotransmitters for mood, okay? They all start with food. you know, your body needs to produce them, and it does it quite well if we're fueling it correctly. So like at the, let's say serotonin. So serotonin requires tryptophan to be made. Okay. And that typically is foods that have tryptophan in it, like, you know, poultry and some meats and cheeses and nuts and seeds. Like, it's really easy. You can Google search foods that help with tryptophan and you'll come up with a nice list, right? But it gets a little bit deeper than that too, because it requires essential nutrients like vitamin A, C, D, magnesium, all those things, which, you know, when you're eating a rainbow of food, you're going to get more of those things. But our diets are so deficient that food, real food, has become more like an option than a necessity. So when you are depressed or anxious or, you know, whatever, even ADHD, like, really blood sugar balance is a key, you know, balancing your blood sugar, because you're probably eating a lot of foods that are high in sugar and carbohydrates and things that not only don't fuel your neurochemistry, but they dysregulate your blood sugar. And now you've got a 1-2 punch into, you know, depression and anxiety. So my primary goal is food. But what I need to say around that is this, like, I am not a perfectionist. And people with anxiety and depression already typically have obsessive thoughts or perfectionism feelings, or conversely feelings that I'm not worth it or good enough to even eat a good food, you know? So I have to start, and this is where my, you know, psychotherapy training comes into play a little bit, like meeting the client where they are. Okay. Meaning, if I threw a big food plan at you and said, the only way you're going to be successful is if you eat all these wonderful things, and you're like, yeah, but I eat ice cream and chips and I don't even have those things and I don't feel like I'm worthy of good food, this is going to be a colossal failure. So the first place I start is with the introduction of some protein, because most of the people that I work with are not eating protein at all. So they're not even fueling the basic requirement for neurotransmitters. So, you know, if eating a, you know, if baking chicken isn't your thing, like, we'll find a decent, maybe even ready-made protein shake, just to keep it as simple as possible, so that you can feel just a tiny bit of success that will build on itself. I can't start at the finish line if you don't even have shoes and socks for the race.
That's a great analogy there. Yeah, and again, there's a couple of points there. I think this is particularly a problem in the US, just, you know, the amount of processed food. I say particularly the US, I think probably most Western countries with a high level.
We are very convenient in our lifestyles and convenient in our foods. Like, the faster, the more convenient, the better. And we're also like a quick fix society. If something's broke, I want to fix it, and I want to fix it right now. Which, you know, changing lifestyle, slowing down for yoga or breathing, like, I don't have time for that. Like, you don't have time for 5 minutes of breathing? Wow, we have a ways to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is the thing, isn't it? That it's knowledge of self. I mean, one of the things that set me on the yoga journey, I did a course called Inner Engineering. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard about it, the guy who put it together, a chap called Sadhguru, he was, his explanation really made sense, because have you heard of the chef Gordon Ramsay?
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah, he's like effing and blind, the guy from the UK, right?
Yes.
So he did this show a few years ago where his businesses weren't doing well and whatever, and he just needed to get out of the country. So he went backpacking around India. So he did three shows where he went to three different parts of India, three different types of cuisine, and then at the end of the show, you'd have to cook for some critics. And India being the largest vegetarian country in the world, he did a show on vegetarianism. Now, Ramsay was at that time a hardcore carnivore. So he went to this ashram out in the forest somewhere in South India, spent time with this guru, and he was making breakfast for Gordon Ramsay. And so Ramsay started challenging him and saying that, well, you know, what about this? What about that? And what Sadhguru basically explained was that he goes, listen, it's not about morality, it's about well-being. Yeah. Everything that you put into your body has a certain chemical basis and causes a certain chemical reaction, right?
Yeah.
If you can take a pill and change the chemical balance, then why can't you do that consciously? And that's what inner engineering was basically about, consciously going through processes to change your internal chemistry.
Yeah.
And like I say, the end result is that you just always feel better afterwards, right? And it's about making yourself into a pleasant chemistry as opposed to a confused and toxic chemistry. But, you know, people are hit from all sides, aren't they? Whether it's food, whether it's the air, whether it's the water they're drinking.
Yeah. The people they hang out with and the negative things, the negative thought patterns that you have, or how you speak to people or how people speak to you, is all brain food.
Oh, massively, massively. Well, so something that I was, and this was an earlier podcast episode that I did when I was just kind of getting my thoughts down and getting used to the format. But something that really, really I found fascinating on this, can't remember which Netflix show it was, but they were talking about cortisol, the enzyme that your body produces when you're in a state of stress. Mm-hmm. And something that they explained was that when they're doing, I think, heart transplants, because there's a real danger of the body rejecting the organ, because the immune system starts fighting against it, what they actually do is inject the patient with cortisol to shut down the immune system.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that was a real wow moment. Like, wow. So if you're constantly walking around in a heightened state of stress, producing cortisol, you're effectively impairing or shutting down your own immune system. So you need to be conscious of this happening and then be conscious of the solutions, you know, what you're putting in your body, how you're sitting, breathing, you know, walking,
you know,
all of these types.
I've known the connection between, you know, stress, cortisol, and the immune system, but having it explained like that even transplant physicians know how important it is, but we're not talking about it like that makes sense to people. So I think sometimes when we talk about different things like the immune system and stress and whatever, having a solid example of what physicians know kind of brings things to light a little differently, instead of saying things like, well, you know, stress in your immune system. Yeah. But did you know that they will actually compromise your immune system through your stress hormone cortisol so that your heart transplant will work? Did you know that? What? Yeah. You know, like, to me, examples like that are profound and we're not sharing them enough, you know?
Exactly. And that, like I said, was a real wow moment for me.
Too. That is wow. Yes, that is actually wow. So
absolutely. And that's part of the effort with, you know, what we're doing as well. Obviously, you know, we're called Layer Yoga. So that's absolutely the core basis, giving people that knowledge. But then there's so much other stuff as well. And ultimately what it is and what these conversations are about is consciousness, right? Making people more conscious how they eat, sleep, walk, live, you know. And this is something that's slowly, I think, starting to spread. The conversation around mental health is certainly growing. So answers are being looked for as well, which I think is really good.
I
think that's growing.
I just want people to know that if you feel stuck in the mental health cycle, if you feel stuck in all, like, you have a number of different options, because not everybody's going to resonate with brain health, you know, not everybody, but somebody might resonate with yoga, you know, or a starting point, a jumping off place, you know, to get it moving. And that's kind of where, like, my clients, a lot of them come from. Like, I feel like I'm their last resort, right? They've tried quote unquote, everything else, when in reality, most of them have just tried a ton of different medications or different therapists, or, you know, they're searching, you know, they're searching for something different. And, you know, the stuff that I do with brain health, which I call the Brain Love Method, is one piece of this puzzle, right? It's one small piece. But once we can balance some of that brain chemistry naturally, people are more open to adding in other things in their life that just tend to make sense. But until you can get your brain to a place that is, you know, on the stronger side of healthy, it's really difficult to see any other option. You know, we tend to, I mean, I've heard people like, well, you know, I'd really like to do brain health, but I think I'm just going to do, you know, I'm just going to try to accept the anxiety as part of me. And I'm like, what? Like, I mean, I get that, like, instead of resisting it, accept it, but boy, that seems dismal, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know what, it's just not natural. Cause I mean, you know, children tend to be generally the most joyful people that you can be around. And you know, they're not generally, well, like I say, I've never met a child that was anxious when it was born. Well, when you meet them a few years later, when they're turning into adults, that's when it really starts hitting home with them. And a lot of that is learned behavior, basically learned behavior through not having a framework to manage themselves with.
Well, I mean, it's a lot it's of it is energy, and not all of it, like energy from mother to infant or father to child. You know, I remember having the daycares and having my own children, and I'm like, all right, if this child is crying or my own child is crying, the worst thing I can do is get all upset that they're crying, like, because I can't console them. The best thing I can do is relax my body, relax my mind, and just try to be there with the child. And people would say to me, how do you do that? I'm like, years of practice. But it doesn't do me any good, or the child any good, if I'm in a stressed out place. They are too. We're both stressed. Cortisol's pumping. You know, I mean, there's some research that, you know, talks about the urine output of cortisol in a newborn baby based on the mother's stress level during pregnancy. And I'm like, this is fascinating stuff, people. We need to pay attention, you know?
Yeah.
So energetically, when we talk about that, like, we can energetically command a room. You know, if you walk into a room and you're stressed out, everyone else is going to get stressed out too. Or if you feel the energy of a stressed out room, you will be stressed as well, unless you learn how to have control over your nervous system, at least a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it goes back to that point of being conscious and being balanced. Yeah. You know, if you've got an internal balance, whichever way you achieve it, then it helps in those scenarios. Something that I discussed with in a previous role, a guy who was delivering some training for us, I think we were talking about learned behavior, and he was talking about how children crying when they fall over is for the most part a learned behavior. Because if they fall over and they hurt themselves and then suddenly everyone's panicking around them, you know, they tend to start crying. And he was giving the example of a friend's child who fell over, like literally split her head open and got up and started laughing because, you know, what she'd been brought up around was if she fell over, there wasn't this big panic, not because they didn't care, but because they're aware that, you know, don't give that energy off because that'll just panic her and make her worse. She literally like split her head open and bounced up and, you know, she's laughing and they managed to keep her. She was all right. Yes, completely with that. So as we draw to a close, a final question that I like to always leave on, because I'm a big music lover, so I love hearing about and exploring new types of music. A, you know, are you into your music? And B, if you are, do you have an artist or a song that you can recommend? And I'll find it on Spotify so that we can write down to that. But for all the listeners on Anchor. And you know what? This is a question that really stumps most people.
It's, you know, the funniest part to me is this. When I was in high school, back in the late 80s, I worked at a record store when they had records and cassette tapes. And I was so into music back then that I could have listed an artist. So, my favorite stuff is just anything from the 80s that will elicit a positive memory. And, you know, like Tears for Fears or things like that. I prefer that kind of stuff because I know the impact to memory. And if it brings you back to a nice, good space, that's the music that I enjoy, is really music of my own youth. So sorry, I don't have a better answer for you.
No, that is absolutely fine, because I dare say there may be someone who hears this who's never heard of Tears for Fears.
They're old school.
Yeah, well, this was it. I was a child in the 80s and then in the 90s as well. So one of my previous guests who came on a couple of episodes ago, a chap called Duncan McKean, who does a show for the BBC over here. He said during lockdown, he's been listening to a lot of, and I don't know if they were big over in the States, but there's a band called Wet, Wet, Wet.
Okay.
They're a Glaswegian band called Wet, Wet, Wet. They did, I think their biggest hit maybe would have been, do you remember the film Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Yes, absolutely.
With Hugh Grant. They did a cover of Love Is All Around, the Trogs Love Is All Around. That's not their, that actually did turn into their biggest song. They did loads of other stuff. But yeah, he said, yeah, he's been listening to a lot of that. So I dug out the Wet, Wet, Wet earlier this week and I was having a listen. So no, Tears for Fears, that's brilliant. Any particular Tears for Fears
Probably
song?
The standard Shout, you know. I remember listening to that song over and over and over again. It's a good one. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Because what I do is, and I think this is only available to people who listen to this on Anchor, I find the song on Spotify and then we can write out
nice.
To it at the end.
I can't wait. So, hey, it's very valid because I would just like to shout out to everybody that, you know, you have options and you can take control of your mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great message to leave on. Do you want to give out your social media?
Sure. It's pretty easy. Dr. Tara Lynn on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And now, surprisingly, TikTok. Find me on TikTok. It's super fun.
You know what, this is the thing, because I was wrestling with how to actually do TikTok for what we're doing. So in the end, I decided to not put people through the pain of having to see me. So I've just been chopping up little 1 minute videos of Sadhguru when he's doing talks at the UN and doing question and answer sessions and stuff like that, and just getting that knowledge out there. That's absolutely fantastic. So yeah, if anyone would also like to link up with us, you can find us on Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn at Leia Yoga, and on Instagram it's Leia_Yoga7, and YouTube is the Leia Yoga Journey. And once again, Dr. Terrellin, thank you ever so much for the chat. I really, really enjoyed it. And whoever is listening to this, thank you very much for tuning in. This was the Leia Yoga podcast with Dr. Terrellin. Leia Yoga, helping you overcome anxiety through the power of classical Hatha Yoga, helping you become calmer, joyful, and stronger out there in society. Have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever.